This is Matt from PureNintendo.com, and you are listening to the KoopaCast, PureNintendo.com's official podcast. Before we begin, I would like to thank Big Giant Circles for allowing us to use his music for our podcast. To hear more of his work, please check out iTunes.com/BigGiantCircles, or you can go to BigGiantCircles.com. Hey everyone, welcome to the KoopaCast. I am your host, Matt, the Multimedia Manager of PNM and PureNintendo.com, your independent source for all things Nintendo. And I am joined by only one other person, but we haven't seen him in quite a while, so, you know, think of him like a special guest. It's Harrison Melfeld.
Greetings, everybody, and I'm glad I've had the title of special guest.
And just like, actually, before we get into the news, Harrison, how are you doing? I haven't seen you in a while. The audience hasn't seen you in a while. We don't know what's happened to you. I mean, have you been abducted? Are you okay? Is everybody safe?
Metroid fans abducted me after I bought Metroid Prime Federation 4. So yeah, even before that, they've been on my tail. So they've been just, you know, hacking my bank account, you know, stealing my identity. But no, I kid. Honestly, it's just I've been running around, you know, doing other little things on here. I mean, for those who probably, you know, aside from Pure Nintendo, I actually, you know, run my own little podcast with a little grassroots podcast on the side. And I've just been doing that and just, you know, going between that and trying to get through my backlog of games. And it's just been 3DSville for me right now. I mean, just today I actually bought Federation Force right now and got through the training sessions, and I don't know, it's a training session and I'm generally getting comfortable with the controls, especially with the gyro motion to aim. So there's that. And yeah, just picking and choosing my games right now, not based on reviews, but how much money I have.
That's a very understandable tactic. I think many of us out there can associate choosing the right game because of money.
Oh yeah, and people will say to me, it's like, oh, you're just following critics, whatever. It's like, well, no, I'm trying to follow something that justifies, you know, is my $40 or $60 worth putting towards this, or do I need to wait for a price drop? And thankfully, I've been doing that a lot with my 3DS on games I missed out on. Phoenix Wright Dual Destinies. I bought that for $12, and it's originally $30. Having fun with that. And that's my first Phoenix Wright game ever. I just wanted to try the series out.
Oh, wow. That's your first one, huh?
Yep.
You need to go back to the first three. I think that's on sale too, the trilogy.
It is currently, but I asked a friend of mine, it's like, hey, which of these should I get, the trilogy or Dual Destinies? And my co-host said, get Dual Destinies. I mean, they felt like it was a good intro to the series. But, I mean, I guess it's just the age, probably from the first three games, you know. They said, like, oh, the presentation of this new one just looks better. And that's what I went for. So,
Your friends are wrong. The better deal was the trilogy. I'm not knocking Dual Destinies. Dual Destinies is an okay game. It's a lot. It's an easier game than the first three, but I just don't feel like the charm was quite as there as it was, you know, in the first three.
Who knows? Maybe I might go back to it soon or find something like that. But you mentioned the word trilogy. Isn't there a question block this week?
That's absolutely right. Our question block this week is to vote for your favorite SNES trilogy. Harrison, can you run down the choices for me?
I don't have... Well, I know the first two on there. It's the Donkey Kong Country trilogy, the Mega Man X trilogy, the Super Star Wars trilogy, and... Oh, boy, what is that last one?
Is it the Mortal Kombat trilogy?
I think you are right. Yes, it is the Mortal Kombat trilogy. And of course, that's not counting the two or three different versions of Mortal Kombat 3 we got during the Super Nintendo.
Oh, that's true. But you could always just do the Mortal Kombat 3 trilogy. And looks like early votes are Donkey Kong Country as resounding lead with 64%.
The only one of the Donkey Kong, I've owned all the Donkey Kong Country series games as a growing up, but 2 was always my favorite. Just because I felt like it was able to correct all the little quirks that the first game happened. Because, you know, as a young kid, when I bought that, I bought into the hype because of visually it was like rent when my brother brought it home, whatever, one day to rent. And I was just blown away by, like, is this really a Super Nintendo game? And then since then, I've just been playing All in All 4. I think the only one in the game I actually 100%ed was the third one, and that's technically one of the harder ones to get the true ending.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There was a true ending. There's a hidden island and everything.
Yeah, it's in the annoying part was, like, collecting all those banana birds. Ugh, I get PTSD just trying to find those, like, the hardest spots in those.
Now, I've actually 100% of the first one, 102% of the second one, and 100% of the third one.
I say, when you're 100%ing the first one, is it just completing each one with either Donkey or Diddy? Or
no,
because there wasn't that many collectibles, aside from the con letters.
No, but there were all the hidden mini-games.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. But I digress, because the right answer to that question mark, our question block poll was, of course, Mega Man X. I'm sorry for all of you who got it wrong.
Yeah, well, I did pick Mega Man X, so that was my vote.
There you go. See, you're on the right. You're on the winning team. Well, you're not the winning team right now, but you maybe will be the winning team.
Well, Mega Man X is... Well, actually, today, this recording, with the 25th anniversary of the Super Nintendo, Mega Man X easily, if I'm compiling my top 10 SNES games, Mega Man X is in there.
So. Oh, yeah, same here. Mega Man X, Mega Man... I think Mega Man X 2 is a little bit better than Mega Man X, because it just builds upon, you know, the first game's mechanics just so well.
Yeah, and I think... Well, I think it kind of showed in the third game on there, which... Wow, this is weird. It seems like the third game in each of these trilogies I've only 100%ed, and X3 was the one I 100%ed, and, you know, got the gold armor, got Zero Saber and all that, and that came in handy, especially for that final battle with Sigma, because I remember as a kid, it was probably the most painful final boss, like the second phase of him. And I just knew, like, you know what? I'm not going to deal with any strength this, whatever. I looked in whatever magazine I could, found every bit of, like, armor and secrets to actually get Zero's sword, and it was just 1, 2, dead. There we go.
Hey, I think your childhood impressions are not far off. I mean, that final boss was pretty rough.
Yeah, it was. The first two I got through, and I guess they just had to up the ante a little bit on this one, but you could definitely tell, especially with the third one, that, you know, Capcom obviously had a good template for putting these things out. Obviously, you wouldn't see a change until X4, which was on the, you know, PC and PlayStation 1, but it was obviously showing where it's like, yeah, there was a lot of reusing ideas and such going in and forth. I mean, yeah, there's different character designs, but it was obviously kind of just showing, like, yeah, they were just putting this out on a conveyor belt.
I wouldn't go that far. I felt like X3 was definitely the more challenging one. Like, feel like they were trying to, like...
Oh, yeah. No. I totally agree on there. That probably out of those three, it was the most difficult. And I think the thing that I just liked about the first one, though, is that it's that first intro stage. Because, and, you know, a lot of people, when they play games today, they take a lot of things for granted when it comes to training session, like to training missions or, well, any portion of the game where it tries to get to understand the mechanics of the game, and usually a lot through text. I mean, obviously that's just based on the design of what 3D gaming and, you know, what games are today. But when I mention how we take things for granted, is that, well, when you look at the intro stage of the Mega Man X, that technically tells you what to do in such the more subtle way. I mean, which way do I go? Or, oh, I can find out, like, what's different about this Mega Man? Oh, I can wall cling? You know, it sets you up to learn these abilities like that. And, of course, once you get beat up by Vile, and then Zero comes in the picture, and then you're wondering, how can I be like him? And, you know, it says in the text, they're like, hey, someday you can be, like, as powerful as me, whatever. I mean, obviously, I'm stealing these lines from the Sequelitis video from Egoraptor, but he's right about that. It's a great way of theming. You know, theming is something that I feel like is not shown a lot in today's games. And Mega Man X, that intro stage, sets it up so well, and that's why I love it so much.
I certainly agree with that. And while we could talk about Mega Man X all day, I know I certainly could. That's not the reason we got here. We're here to talk about the news.
The news, indeed.
So let's start with our first thing. Good news, everyone. Pokemon Go gets a new update.
I think it's good for me to preface that, I think what was the last time I was on here for a podcast was talking about Pokemon Go, or I don't think I was on one. No. Basically, I can't play Pokemon Go because my phone's so old. So, why don't you tell me about these updates here, Matt?
This update's, unfortunately, as of the time of this recording, it's not out for iOS. I've been staring at my phone all day trying to figure it out when it's going to come up. It hasn't yet, but I still have the notes here right in front of me. It should be out for Android users, as far as I'm aware. So they've implemented this Pokemon appraisal. So you'll be able to, like, you know, click on one of the Pokemons, and, you know, depending on which team you've joined, that team leader is going to come up and kind of talk about, like, oh, this person's pretty, you know, strong, or it's got good defense. It looks like those are the only, because of those are the only two stats for Pokemon, aside from HP, is attack and defense. Those are the ones you're really going to hear about. Maybe they'll comment a little bit about weight, and in the end, they're going to talk about, like, potential for battle. So, I mean, that's a pretty interesting update. I don't know how much it's going to really add to the experience, because, again, this is just the Pokemon having HP, attack, and defense, as opposed to, you know, the, I think it was about, the six stats that they'll have in, like, the Pokemon, like, the mainstream Pokemon games. But, nevertheless, it's kind of like an interesting little gimmick they're going to put into this.
It sounds like Niantic is, slowly but surely adding just the small little things that I probably need to get into this, whatever. I mean, little bit of complaints, but that we've seen in, you know, obviously the release version. But obviously there's a lot that people are claiming for, like, you know, when we'll be able to trade Pokemon. But obviously, I think Niantic said at the beginning was like that's the reason why they didn't want to put trading in. They want people to, you know, catch or like go out there and catch Pokemon, as opposed to just like, oh, I have this Pokemon, I'll trade you for this, you know, like I think that's what they wanted to do, is people to actually, you know, find them out there. But then again, there's still probably, I assume, a laundry list of things that this app could probably be fixed that need to be fixed.
Oh, definitely. I'm still very sure they have not addressed the complaints that people are having about Pokemon being much harder to catch. I haven't actually had any issues with catching Pokemon. But, you know, like I said, that's just kind of the buzz that I've been getting around the internet. And that buzz has not gone around. I haven't seen anybody say, oh, thank God, Niantic, you know, went back on this last update about, you know, mechanics. I haven't seen anything like that.
There was one, okay, when you catch multiple Pokemon, like, say, for Pidgey, obviously for Pidgeys, you know, that evolves into, you know, Pidgeotto and then Pidgeot. But you're able to do that is, like, I think you have to transfer, like, some of these multiples of these Pokemon and make them candies, or to get candies, right?
Right.
Okay, and this was one complaint I've heard from people, and I forgot what's... Screw Attack did a countdown of, like, top things to fix Pokemon Go, and this one really... it really confused me, like, why didn't they put this in the beginning? Because it just seems like a simple little design issue that they can just easily fix, and it just something useful is that when you have all these multiple Pokemon, you just click on it, turn to candy. Click on the next one, turn to candy. You can't select them all, you know, of the multiple same Pokemon to transfer candy. You have to keep going through that whole process, and it just seems annoying from what I've heard from, you know, people who've been playing this for weeks on end.
I'd say it's fairly annoying, but I'm not going out and catching Pokemon with, like, maybe the frequency of some people. Like, I'm still, like, level, like, 13 or 14 or something like that. And so I'm catching, like, maybe two or three Pokemon a couple days or so. So, I mean, obviously I'm totally fine with it. It's just hit a couple buttons and it's transferred out. And I'm never usually doing mass transfers. I'm like, oh, I caught that guy, and transfer. And then, oh, there's another guy, catch him, and transfer. So, I mean, that's just been more or less my experience with it. Any other, there are really no other, like, major fixes. There are minor bot fixes. And then, of course, on the notes, they say we are still working hard on several new and exciting features.
Yeah, I could probably see one major update to this probably before the 20th anniversary concludes at the end of this year, or maybe near when Pokemon Sun and Moon are probably nearing release, just to draw up a lot more interest. But I just the first few weeks of this game have actually done enough to build upon, like, you know, create such a bigger, like, you know, just throw more fire onto what is now Pokemania again, part two.
Yeah, and like I said in previous podcasts, Pokemon Go certainly got me back into the Pokemon scene.
You know, and it's great seeing people doing this, whatever. I mean, just to, it gets me nostalgic seeing other people get excited about Pokemon that have never played Pokemon since, you know, the series, like the franchise was at its absolute peak in the early, late 90s. Yep. So, it makes me smile.
Yep, I mean, I agree. I mean, part of me kind of wants to argue that, you know, I think Pokemon's definitely at, like, a much higher fever pitch than it was in the 90s. Simply because, I mean, it's like, it's one of those things where you don't really know it's there unless you're part of it.
Oh, no. That's where I kind of came into it is, knowing what you mean. It's still there and it's still succeeding. It's just, you don't really feel the effect of, like, how great it is unless once you're into it. Not to say that this whole Pokemon series is so exclusive. It's just once you kind of like, okay, I'm playing Pokemon again. It's like, and they're like, oh, now it just, the wheels keep turning. Like, this is why it's so good again. You know, that's why it makes you do to it. You just find those little things to it. That's what I got when I picked up Pokemon Y 3 years ago. That was my first main series Pokemon since Ruby and Sapphire and got back to that. I'm like, that's what got me back into Pokemon again.
Yeah. I mean, Pokemon X was my first Pokemon since Gold, really.
Wow.
So I really had a lot of catching up to do, but the fact that, you know, I'm starting to figure it out a little bit more, but I still find the game series fun. I think that really kind of speaks a lot to the quality of the game and especially to the company that keeps churning these things out, as we're entering Generation 7.
But Generation 7, it's just to me how far we've come.
Yes, it is. And speaking of Generation 7, Pokemon did release, the Pokemon Company did release a couple new announcements, one of which was the footage of a Puku Muku minigame. The footage, unfortunately, was the least exciting footage I've ever seen in a promotional trailer. Simply because it's a minigame in which you throw Puku Muku that have washed into shore back into the ocean. And then you get money for that. Apparently you get.
So,
what's up?
So let me get this straight. You're throwing this Pokemon into the ocean, basically like, hey, be free, and it's like, oh, here's some cash for doing that.
Yeah,
is that what you're getting at?
You get $20,000 apparently for doing that.
And are these things rare?
Puku Mukus? Yeah. If they're washing up on shore, I guess not. Apparently they're a nuisance, and they need to be off their beach. And this guy just does not know how to run a business, and he's paying his employees too much money. Or it's just there's a hyperinflation on the Alola region. Because when's the last time you've won $20,000 from fighting a trainer?
Does a gym leader count?
Gym leader? Oh, do they shell out that much money?
I think the most I ever saw was like maybe 8,000. To me, it's like when I'm getting so much all this money probably through the game, it just comes to me to a point where I get near the end of the game when playing any Pokemon, it's like, oh, I have that much money? Wow, I wasn't paying attention.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think you can win a lot from the Elite Four, or you could just milk the Battle Mansion out.
Mm-hmm.
Which, that was, I think that was it. But, man. I mean, I know we need to talk about the game, but I think we need to talk about this inflation. I think we need to talk about some Pokemon economics here.
Okay.
Something's going to crash. I don't know if the island housing market's going to go down or the Pokeball market's going to go down. Somebody's taking out too many loans. Is, like, the Pokeball factory too big to fail? What's going on here? We need answers.
Well, I don't know. When you look at Pokemon centers and they tell you, like, we look forward to seeing you again, I think that's where you have to start out with. I mean, are they forcefully trying to get people to come to Pokemon centers?
But the Pokemon centers are free, so what are you gaining out of that?
The fact that the employees are underpaid?
So it's about paying Poke Center employees 15,000 Poke Dollars an hour?
something like that. And I don't know, differentiating between the Nurse Joys and the Officer Jennies.
Hmm.
I know that's not in the new game series, but I had to put something out there.
There hasn't been a single police officer in any of those games, except for Looker, who's that international, like that Interpol Pokemon guy.
Oh yeah, yeah, you know you're right. It's, yeah, all these kids wandering around just catching Pokemon without any supervision. I mean, I know some are adults, but it's you got to at least have some public servants out there helping out.
Yeah, there's got to be someone in there. Maybe like, or is it left up to the Rangers?
Well, not only that, it's like they're allowing, what's the new Team Rocket S team in this one?
Team Skull?
Yeah, you got Team Skull or Team Flare running rampant and there's no law around. What kind of world is this? I mean, it's awesome, it's Pokemon, but you need the police to just stop these people from stealing Pokemon.
Or anybody. Why wasn't anybody, joining me on taking down this Doomsday device that was announced to be, opened up?
It's at that point when you're just like, we got to call 911, yes. And it's just, the number you're trying to reach has been disconnected.
Where was Interpol on this? I mean, Looker was there. He's like, I'm here to clean up after the whole, I don't know, after you did most of the work, I'm kind of here to clean up. Like, where were they before?
Oh, Jesus.
I feel like we're poking a lot of holes.
Well, no, it's making me want to write a script to the a Pokemon spinoff of the Big Short. I really want to get hard on that.
Now, okay, you should do that, but you have to somehow bring it all back to the Pukumuku minigame.
Bring it all back to that?
Yep.
That way everything comes full circle?
Exactly. It's got to come back to that.
Well, this is what I'll do. The movie will start out with that. And it'll just basically kind of give a bit of, I wouldn't say foreshadowing, but say like, how did we get here in this whole great Pokemon economic crash? And then it will just end with that. It's just, I can't say I'm not a great screenwriter. I'm just saying I'm just a great Pokemon player. So
there you go. Oh, you're tuning your own horn in your Pokemon playing ability, huh?
Yeah. And I'm sure people who are probably listening to this are going to get some several mentions at me or email saying like, oh really?
Yeah, give out your friend code right now. Let's bring out some challengers. No? Come on, I'll find.
Yeah, but yeah, this mini game and
this deflection. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, fine. Since Harrison's deflecting, he's already. I mean, he's chickening out. That's really a shame, but. Here's what's not a shame, is that we did hear that Dragon Quest XI has been confirmed for the NX, and furthermore, it will be a simultaneous release between the NX, 3DS, and PS4 versions in order to avoid spoilers. That's quite an ambitious goal right there.
Yeah, so there's the possibility that you could just delay this for the fact like, hey, we want to release this with the NX, so, well, I think what I'm getting at, well, one, didn't this already get confirmed for NX about a couple months ago? Because it was like, this was like one of the first instances where it's like, oh, we have our first NX game confirmed.
Well, there was Dragon Quest X that was confirmed for NX.
Oh, it was that. It was that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Because the only other ones we have this, 10, Just Dance, and... There's four. I believe there's four out that's been confirmed.
Yeah, but I cannot remember that fourth one now. Shoot. That's going to bug me. I'll put it in post right now. Sonic 2017 title. And The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. Wow, what a great game.
Yeah, well, we got that all taken care of.
All right. And finally, for our closing news. Sorry, we're kind of rushing right along on this one. Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, who is the Prime Minister of Japan, I should probably mention that first, he showed up on the Rio's closing ceremony briefly dressed up as Mario.
Did you notice, okay, right before that whole thing happened, I had tweeted out right during the closing ceremony, and I said, you know, is it too much to ask that I said he's not an athlete, that Shigeru Miyamoto light the Olympic cauldron in the 2020 Tokyo Olympics dressed as Link. I said, is it too much to ask? And then a few minutes later, during the Tokyo 2020 segment, during the Rio closing ceremonies, I see, you know, it's like, okay, there's a lot of bits from Japanese culture, from anime, and then you see like Hello Kitty, Doraemon, and then bits from gaming culture, like first like arcade games with like Pac-Man. And then you see Shinzo Abe, who is in one of his limo, he's like, I'm going to be late or something to going to Rio, transforms into Mario, and you see Doraemon build this green pipe, and then Mario pulls up this map that says to Rio, which then opens up cleverly says Mario, you know, and he winks to the camera, and then it just, the pipe goes all the way down from Tokyo to Rio in this, you know, cute little video segment, and then you see Shinzo Abe pop out, and then for a brief second you see him in the Mario outfit, but it looks like it's like he was like going up and then into it, and then he just rips the costume off and then takes the hat off and waves it to the crowd. And at that point, I'm just like, we're 4 years away from this Olympics, and it's already the best Olympics, probably, in my opinion.
I think that video definitely solved one thing for me, which I never thought of, which was that when Mario goes down a pipe, he's going down feet first, but when he comes up a pipe, he's going up head first. Never really thought about that until I watched that, and then he kind of went through the pipe, and then he flipped. I was like, why is he flipping? Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really the only takeaway I got from that video.
After they close up that segment and you just see fireworks, you can briefly hear the Super Mario Brothers stage clear jingle.
Oh, nice.
Briefly on there. And this is obviously Japan wanting to actually get into, show a lot more of their great cult. Like, I mean, I love the Japanese culture, especially from not only from video games, but also from film, probably going in. But this is going to be one great way to actually just bring out, you know, this next Olympics coming out. And I wouldn't be shocked if they use things like, I don't know, Pikachu or Mario, Doraemon, or any other characters, like even from like, you know, fun, like Dragon Ball Z or anything, as their official mascots for this Olympics. Because, I mean, Japan did that for the Japanese soccer team for the 2014 World Cup. They used Pokemon. That was their mascots.
Huh.
And I just liked it because it just shows, you know, people will say like, oh, Mario's not relevant anymore or anything like that. What are you kidding me? People know what Mario is. And that instance, you see the Prime Minister of Japan use that character as a pivot point for their city hosting the next Olympics, it speaks volumes. It really does. So, I mean, but also, did you notice that Mario's buddy Sonic did not join him on the trip?
Yeah, that seems like a missed opportunity for marketing right there.
Mm-hmm. But I thought it was awesome. I really did. I thought it was, my dad called me the next day. He's like, did you watch that? He's like, yeah. And I finished out the words and I'm like, no, it was awesome, Dad. It was just seeing that come up versus Mario, my smile is so big, you can just see it from space.
All right. And I think with that, we're going to go ahead and close out this news segment. So, Harrison, I want to thank you for joining me with this.
Oh, anytime. And it was great to hear. Just hopefully this is a more regular occurrence for me to get on the show a little bit more, but not making any promises.
Absolutely, but we would love to have you back. Mm-hmm. And for all you out there listening, please stay tuned for part two, where we uncover a little bit more about Alex Schremke's Metroid Federation Force review. All right, see you then.
Bye-bye.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the KoopaCast. I'm Matt, and I'm joined by Alex, and we're here to talk about his Metroid Prime Federation Force review.
What's going on, everybody?
And unfortunately, due to a scheduling conflict, we could not get Justin in here. So, sorry for that, everybody. We'll make it up to you next week. So, Alex, let's get straight down to the brass tacks, shall we?
Let's do it.
So, Federation Force. Better or worse than Super Metroid?
Oh, that's not really fair now, is it? of course, Super Metroid is going to be the better game. But you're comparing two very different things.
All right. That's all I needed. Thanks for joining us, everyone. We'll see you next week for the next KoopaCast.
Good night, everybody.
All right. Yeah. But so, yeah, like you said, you was like, was it not comparing apples to oranges?
Yeah, this is, it's a very different game, I think, than like the main series. It's a spin-off game, so it's supposed to be. The focus is obviously on the multiplayer, and it's not so much about exploring as it is more action oriented.
All right. So is it like, I guess that in that vein, it'd be more closer to like, say, the Prime series, maybe like Prime 3. Did you play Prime 3?
I've only played the first Metroid Prime game.
Oh, okay. So Prime 3 was a lot more, I thought, combat focused than it was exploration. That one, you went like planet to planet, kind of solving, you know, each planet's issues mm-hmm. while trying to unravel the space pirate's mystery. And I kind of got that sense from like what I saw of Federation Force from like the reviews and maybe the screenshots.
Yeah, the game is very mission based. Most of the missions are probably going to take you anywhere from like 10 to 20 minutes a pop. So it's very straightforward and more linear than a traditional Metroid would be. That's not to say that there aren't little secrets for you to find.
So there are like a good amount of like maybe Easter eggs?
There's a few. We can get to that if you want. But there are, let's say there are alternate paths that you can take for exploring, and they'll reward you with items called mod chips. And mod chips are what you use to give your mech extra power. So it rewards you from going off the beaten path, but it's still, the levels are very much linear.
Okay, so
if that makes any sense.
No, it does. Are these mod chips like kind of like maybe the power-ups in like a traditional Metroid game? Like, you know, like, oh, here's a missile expansion, or here's an extra energy tank.
Yes and no. Mod chips, they each kind of do like a different job. So you can have up to three equipped onto your mech at one time. Some of them will do things like if you run out of health, it'll revive you instead of getting a game over. Some of them will beef up your defenses so you can take more hits. Others will make you better at healing. There's all kinds of different little secondary effects. So it's not like a traditional power-up in the sense where you're getting like an energy tank.
It's more like, you know, say in maybe a multiplayer game where you put in like, oh, I want, you know, this kind of layout or this kind of setup before going exactly. into battle. Like, I need this kind of gun, I need this kind of grenade, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. What's cool about it is depending on what type of mission you're going at, you might want to equip different mod chips. So let's say you're going on a mission where you're going to have to defend an object from like a huge horde of space pirates. You're probably going to want to equip those mod chips that give you better healing because the game expects you to heal the target because they're going to throw so many enemies at you that you're going to have to heal whatever object you're defending. They try to overwhelm you.
All right. So I'm assuming then they give you I think you said it in your review that they give you a briefing, right? Before you start the mission?
Yeah. Before every mission, they tell you what you're going to be doing. And that kind of gives you your hints on, okay, this is what I should probably be taking with me.
All right. Do they throw any like curveballs at you? Like, oh, this is a defense mission. But all of a sudden you got to go in the tech. Or, you know, maybe you have like to infiltrate and you get ambushed.
There are some ambushes in some of the missions. But I find if you're properly prepared, it won't take you too much off guard. But you might have to do some more fighting at the end of a mission. Or let's say, for an example, there was a mission where I had to go through the space station where the space pirates were hatching all these Metroids. So obviously, I took a bunch of this ice power-up with me. And they said, you know, oh, you can kill a few, but, you know, we're trying to blow up the space station, so you don't focus on taking the Metroids out. Mm-hmm. So I promptly didn't listen to them and wasted all of my ice power-ups you know, killing all the Metroids that I could see. And then once the self-destruct sequence activated, I had to run out and try to avoid all these new Metroids that were coming after me because I had wasted all my ice power-ups and I couldn't find any more.
Oh, so you got to listen to the mission briefing.
Mm-hmm.
So another question I had was that in the traditional Metroid games, you're Samus, you know, intergalactic bounty hunter, super powerful, full of missiles, just jumping like 20 feet in the air and just, you know, blowing everything up and destroying all these space pirates. But here, you know, you're just some guy in the army. Does the gameplay kind of like reflect that? Do you feel like, man, you are so less powerful than Samus is? Or like, yeah.
To be fair, you are in a mech, so you're not that defenseless, but I get what you're trying to say. If you're playing the game alone, you definitely don't feel as powerful as, say, you are with a group of people. Like when I played online, I was surprised at how much easier it was to tackle certain missions that I struggled with on my own. So in a way, the game makes you feel like on your own, you're not as powerful, but like together, if you rely on your friends and teamwork, you become stronger as a unit, which I thought was pretty clever.
Did you feel like in the online stuff now, there's no like voice communication in this at all. Do you feel like that was a problem for you at all?
No, I feel the preset dialogue options that they give you cover most of the situations. A good example was I was playing a mission online where we had to fight these ice titans. And the goal of the mission was you had to fire some shots at the ice titans to get them to chase you and lead them into these giant cages and then lock them inside.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to trap 4 ice titans. So once we do that, the dropship comes back and it deploys this little extractor. So everybody's supposed to meet up at the end of the mission on the extractor to get taken back up to the ship. So since I've already played the mission, I know where the extractor is and I start heading towards there and I'm ready to go. And then all of a sudden I find my teammates and they're still picking fights with ice titans when the mission's already over. We just have to get the heck out of there. So I had to use the in-game text, and one of them was follow me, guys. And it took a couple tries of using it, but then everybody, you know, knew what they were supposed to do. I used follow me over here, and everybody came over, and we completed the mission.
All right. And so, like, was overall, was your, like, online experience positive? Was everybody, like, pretty cooperative? Or was there, like, you know, one or two people trying to, like, ruin it for everybody?
Luckily, I didn't experience any griefers. But, yeah, the online play was really smooth. Everybody, we had a lot of fun working together. And it was kind of fun also watching them tackle the missions and tackling the puzzles in a different way that I did. And I think a lot of people will have fun with the online missions. It's a really smooth and fun experience. If there are people that cause you grief, the game does give you an option to blacklist those players. And anybody who disconnects in the middle of a mission will have their mod chips destroyed. So that's kind of like a punishment to keep people from doing that.
Oh, that's just pretty interesting there. Is it like a permanent destruction then, I'm guessing? Or, I mean, it says destroyed. Yeah. That sounds pretty obvious, but I just, you know.
Yeah, I guess I neglected to mention that certain mod chips can be destroyed, which obviously happens if you disconnect. Or let's say if you're playing by yourself and you die in a mission, mm-hmm. Your mod chips have a chance to be destroyed, but that chance is pretty slim.
Can you restore your mod chips after they're destroyed? Like, can you, like, pay a fee or something? Or, like space dollars?
No, once they're destroyed, they're gone. But you're able to find so many in the missions that it's pretty inconsequential.
Okay. Do you feel like there's a good balance between, like, all the mod chips? Like, did you ever find one that was just like, oh, okay, this is the mod chip I need. I don't need anything else. I can just, you know, wipe everything out forever.
The ones that I stuck with in the game were there's one the game gives you right off the bat called Lone Wolf, and that increases your damage and halves the damage you take when you're playing by yourself. That one can never be destroyed. So that one was always in the first slot. I also used increased healing, because obviously I was playing by myself for a majority of the game, and that helped me out tremendously. And then there was a third one that gave me like 5 extra item slots so I could take more items with me on a mission. And like those three were probably the ones I relied on for probably about 70% of the game.
Okay. Did you play any... I'm sorry, I'm just going to switch topics here pretty quickly. Did you play any Blast Ball?
I played a little bit, but I don't. Once you play one round of Blast Ball, it's kind of the same thing over and over again. Yeah, it can get kind of hectic, but the gameplay is pretty simplistic.
Do you feel like, you know, maybe playing with your friends would give it a little bit more longevity?
If there was proper voice chat with friends, then yeah. Because it would be more fun to kind of like taunt your friends when you're making goals and stuff. But with the preset, you know, good job or thanks, you know, preset phrases, it's not as much fun to taunt her.
All right, so basically the game's not going to do you any favors playing with your friends versus playing online random people.
Yeah, I mean, it's an okay addition to, you know, as a distraction from the main game, but I think people will probably get tired of it pretty quickly.
All right, and finally, I wanted to ask, you know, this is a spin-off of Metroid. You see Samus a couple times, you know, throughout the game. As I've seen, you know, do you feel like, you know, Metroid fans should, you know, give this game a shot?
I think they should. If you go and judge the game because it's not a traditional Metroid, you're kind of giving yourself a disservice. You're doing yourself a disservice, I should say. I think the game has a lot of merits to it. The atmosphere is still really cool. A perfect example is there's one mission where you're on an ice planet and you have to go to one of these down Federation ships, and you're going in there to like retrieve some data. And there's a really cool attention to detail. As you're climbing up this wrecked spaceship, you can actually see Samus's spaceship flying off in the distance. And I thought that was like a really cool attention to detail, and it kind of makes the world seem more organic and alive, because you're off doing all of these missions while Samus is doing her own thing, and she's retailing. She's relaying a bunch of information to you about the space pirates so you can continue your attack on them. So it kind of feels like you're working together.
All right.
Which is, you know, obviously a very different perspective from the series we've seen so far.
I gotcha. All right. So, and finally, what did you give this game?
I gave it a 7.5.
A 7.5. So, you know, a very respectable score, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I think if people go into it with an open mind, there's a lot of fun that they can have with it. But if you're going to be dead set on this is terrible because it's not traditional Metroid, then you've already made your decision that you're going to hate it.
All right. Alex, I want to thank you very much for joining me on this quick look at your Metroid Federation Force review and kind of sharing with us a little bit more about your experience with the game.
It was fun. I hope people read the review.
I hope they do too. In addition to that, I hope people read our 30th issue of PNM Magazine. And in this magazine, we have our own little way of celebrating Metroid's 30th anniversary by kind of sharing our reviews of our favorite Metroid games. And of course, there are also plenty of other awesome articles that we encourage you to check out. So you can go to purenintendo.com/magazine for more information on how to subscribe to PNM. And I really hope you do. In the meantime, if you want to check us out on Twitter, you can always follow us. I am @purely_Matt. Alex, you have a new Twitter handle, right?
I do. @purelyAlex, all one word.
There you go. And that's way better than your last Twitter handle.
It was long overdue, I know.
And all of us together are at Pure Nintendo. If you have any questions for the KoopaCast, you can always email us at podcast@purenintendo.com. And finally, if you want to catch up on previous episodes on the KoopaCast, you can always go to purenintendo.com/podcast, or you can go to iTunes and look up the KoopaCast. So, for more news, reviews, and features, please check out purenintendo.com, your independent source for all things Nintendo. And we'll see you next time.
See you next mission.